Yankees baseball is on. WFAN, WFAN FM, WFAN HD1 New York, and Odyssey Sports Station.
Thank you, Steve. This was my mistake this time, not yours. Boomer and Geo coming to you live from Giants camp from the traveling built forward tough studio, the Quest Diagnostics Center, as we get you ready for the 2024 football season. Daniel Jones, Giants starting quarterback, with us right now. Daniel, good morning. What's happening?
Not a whole lot. How y'all doing?
We are doing great. So Boomer watching the game and me watching the game on Saturday, of course, people are going to overreact to the pick six. But after that, getting the ball down the field, looked like he had clean pockets. I mean, there's going to be mistakes in preseason games, but I feel like after that, you guys look very aggressive and great on offense. What was your take after the pick six?
Yeah, obviously a little shaky start. You know, first time back out there in a while, and you know, a little shaky. Obviously can't afford to make those mistakes. But I thought once, you know, we got going in the second quarter and got some things going, pushed the ball down the field, guys made some good plays. Like you said, the offensive line did a really good job protecting, and felt like we had a pretty good rhythm. So good to feel that and something to build on.
You know, Daniel, I'm thinking after that first interception, you're on the ground. You know that it's intercepted, and you're thinking, oh, my God, I got to walk over and talk to Dabes about this. That miserable feeling, and I try to explain to these guys because I've done it myself, the miserable feeling of throwing an interception, it ends up as a touchdown. It's probably the last thing that anybody wants. The feeling that you have walking to the sideline and looking at Brian Daboll in that conversation that you're about to have with him.
Yeah, I mean, as you know, from playing the position, it's not something you look forward to, but I think it being, you know, a preseason game and first time out there, it was a little bit different of a conversation, and you know, it was just, let's get back out there, let's keep going, let's keep slinging it and make some plays. That's what we did, and felt good to get it going.
All right, so let me ask you, did you watch the off-season Hard Knocks? Did you watch that?
I did, yeah. I watched it.
Okay, so how did you feel about those guys, meaning Joe Shane and Brian Daboll, openly talking about possibly trading up for one of these young quarterbacks?
Yeah, you know, I've talked about this. This has obviously been something I've been asked about a lot to this point. And, you know, you don't feel great about it. It's not something you want to watch or excited to see for sure. So, but, you know, it's part of the business in the NFL, and I understand that. And my job is to focus on what I'm doing and to lock in and get ready to go play the best football I can. So, no, I wasn't happy about it, but it's part of it, and I understand that.
You know, good for you. You shouldn't be happy about it. You should be pissed off about it, quite frankly, because it's your team. It's your reputation, and you're the one that's got to be the leader, and you got to be the unquestioned leader. When did you have your surgery last year? What was it, the early November or
late November?
November.
Yeah.
So you're actually ahead of schedule, by all accounts, and you're on the field and you're going full on. I mean, you obviously realize that this is a very, very important year for you personally.
Yeah, absolutely. The rehab process went well, and lucky to have the staff that we have, doctors, trainers, coaches, everybody here, you know, helped me out a ton. So feel good about the knee, and I'm excited about this year. I feel really good physically, and feel good about the camp we've had.
Boomer and Geo with Daniel Jones on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. When you go out there and live game action for the first time post ACL, are you thinking about it, or is it, you dealt with other injuries, but, you know, ACL is a big deal, a lot of rehab. You went through a grueling off season. Was it in your mind when you were out there, or was it football, just football?
I think, you know, maybe the first snap or two you're thinking about it a little bit, but, you know, I think more just, you know, playing again, the speed of the game, hadn't been out there for a while. I think that's kind of more what you're trying to get used to and back in the swing of things. But I felt good about my knee. Through the process, I, you know, tested it and felt good about where I was and knew I could do everything I needed to do. So I wasn't, you know, overly concerned about the knee as much, just kind of getting back in the swing of playing and use of the speed of the game.
You know, Coach Daboll told us in OTAs, now in summer camp, you guys have been working on moving this ball down the field, throwing it down the field. And, you know, it looks like Darius Slayton and you are back right where you always were. I think you guys have a connection there, but it looks like Malik Nabers is the real deal. What's your impressions of him thus far? are. You played in a game with him. You've watched him out on the practice field. How do you think he's going to do his rookie season?
I think he'll do well. He's made a lot of plays for us. Obviously, extremely talented, and I think his strength and ability to go up and get the ball in some situations will definitely help us. And we got to put that on the field on Sunday. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited about him. I think our whole group, like you said, Darius has done a good job. Jalen, Wondell, all those guys have had really good camps.
So from my perspective in watching your career, after the year where you win the playoff game, you beat Minnesota, best game of your career, arguably, and then you end up losing to the Eagles, you get the big contract, it's almost like an exhale. Like, I did it. I didn't get the fifth-year option picked up. I played great. I got my contract. And now, you go through a year where you get hurt, and then you watch on Hard Knocks how your general manager is evaluating other quarterbacks. You're like, man, I'm right back here again where I got to prove myself again. Is that a fair assessment of how you've looked at the last two or three years of your career?
I think you're always trying to prove yourself. I think even after the playoff season in 22, get the contract. A lot of people have things to say about the contract. I think you're still trying to prove yourself. You're always proving yourself. I felt like that, is kind of the nature of the NFL in a lot of ways. And it's been my experience. So, my preparation and how I view the season or certainly getting ready for it, working in the off season, working at practice is, always of the mindset that I'm trying to prove myself.
I'm trying to think, you get hurt in the middle of the season last year. That had to be an awfully long year listening to everybody just talking about the Giant quarterback situation, your future here. You got to block out the noise sooner or later. How are you able to do that?
Yeah, I don't listen to it. I don't seek it out or try to pay much attention to it. I think you get a sense for what's being said by your interaction, at your press conferences, and your family and friends, will kind of you get a sense of what's being said. But I don't seek it out, and I'm focused on what I'm doing. I think you got to be able to do that in the NFL, especially here in New York, and that's something I've gotten better at over the years. And it's about what happens here. It's about what happens on the practice field and getting ready to play. So I understand that, and I think it's an important part of the job.
For all the negativity that you may think you hear or your family may think they hear, we hear a lot of positivity from the callers who call our station that actually do believe in you and do feel like you can be the leader of the Giants and that you can be the second coming of Eli Manning. So you should know that there are people like our guy over here, Stephen Waldron.
Was worried you were going to fall back.
He didn't want you to fall off the chair because you're the one that's throwing the football, and he actually still believes in you. So there is a lot of positivity around you, although it may not seem that way.
I think I get more questions about the negative and how I deal with that, how I handle that, but you see people around or family, friends, coaches, people you've had, there's been a lot of support and people who've had my back, so I appreciate that, and that's, to me, that's more motivating and more inspiring than proving people wrong. Is proving all those people right and making sure I'm ready to go and show my appreciation for them.
Have you thought about the opening game against Minnesota? I would imagine it's got to be in the front of your mind. Just thinking about what it's going to be like stepping back on that field in front of your fans against a team that you beat in the playoffs 2 years ago that you have a good history against them. I'm just wondering your thought process going into game one this year. Got to be excited.
Yeah, obviously, right? I'm excited. I spent a lot of time thinking about it and looking forward to it. I think, it's a different team in Minnesota, a different defense than the one we played a couple years ago.
Thank God.
But
I grew up a Vikings fan, so you tearing them apart was a rough scene for me, and it was one of probably the best days of your life.
Well, so I'm excited. I'm excited about the first week and getting going. We got a couple important weeks here to finish up camp, but definitely excited.
You know what? If you guys look like you did at the end of the second quarter, or actually from the mid-second quarter on, that's going to be an exciting offense. I mean, this offense, unfortunately, last year anyway, bottom half of the league, bottom third of the league, actually, in a lot of different statistics. We didn't see a lot of big plays from that offense, especially after you had left. I'm thinking that you got to be jacked up, excited, and confident about what you got now around you, especially with your offensive line and with Malik Nabers as a part of your wide receiving core.
Yeah, 100%. I think, over the course of camp, we've improved and made a lot of plays. I think, like you've heard, we've been trying to push the ball down the field, and I think the guys up front, excited about some of the guys we brought in there who've really played well and allow us to do that. And then we mentioned that Malik and the receivers playing well too. So it's a as from playing, it's a group thing. Everyone's got to be on the same page. You got to be able to execute at each spot, and I'm excited about it.
I know you and Saquon are close. What's it been like not having him here for the first time in your career?
Anytime you spend as much time as we did together, and he's a great teammate, great friend, great player, obviously. So, different not having him around, and the guys we've had, and Devin's come in and done a great job. He's a true pro, really good player. So it's been fun working with him. It's definitely been different.
Watching the game the other day, I was listening to Phil Sims. He's a pain in the ass, isn't he? He really is. He's just a pain in the ass. I don't know how you deal with it. I'm sure you've had a lot of conversations with him going into these games. He asks a million questions. I'm sure he's talking about your footwork, talking about your hips, talking about getting the arm over the top. I mean, just got to be a pain in the neck dealing with him.
No, he's a smart guy. Lucky to have him around.
He's lucky to have Phil. Stop.
He's been around more this year, which has been fun to talk to him, spend some time with him.
You know, it's so much better to have him here than where I used to be with him. Yeah. It actually gives me some time off and, a little time to breathe, if you will.
Yeah, absence makes the heart grow fonder, right?
Well, not for me. Maybe for him. But Daniel's got to deal with him now.
Yeah, I know, but I'm sure Phil's a different Phil around Daniel than he is you.
Yeah, but every time he comes into your facility here, what do you see? There's Phil Sims on the right. There's Phil Sims on the left. He's all over the place.
What would he say about you? Is he?
Oh, he loves me.
Think he misses you?
Yeah. Yeah, I know he does, because he calls me and he bothers me.
Sure.
I sent him a text during the game this week. By the way, I said, do they have makeup or no?
You could see through him.
On a broadcast. Yes,
yeah, so. He's not a makeup guy. I respect that.
Okay.
I respect that. A couple more minutes here with Daniel Jones. I wanted to ask you this last year, and I remember when the interview ended, I was like, man, I forgot about that. Do you feel like when you came in here from a media standpoint and dealing with guys like us and in the press conferences, that people told you to be like Eli too much, like, because he handled things so well with the media? I feel like everybody's like, well, just do it the way Eli did it with the media. Do it the way Eli did it. Did people tell you that when you first got here?
I don't, not directly or not over and over again where I felt like I really needed to do that. I think, more than anything, I watched him in a lot of ways and thought, what he did was smart, and he had a lot of success doing it. So, there were ways I tried to kind of emulate some of those things. But, I think personality-wise, maybe we have some similarities, too, that kind of showed itself through the media. But, it wasn't like a hard, you do exactly what Eli does and you'll be okay type message. No.
I'll never forget. I started on this radio program in 2007, and I believe it was Eli's third year in the league. And right in the middle of the season, people were calling up saying, we got to get rid of Eli. We got to get rid of Eli. And they miraculously go on this run, and he wins the Super Bowl MVP that year. When Phil Sims started here, he got benched. He got hurt. He got benched again. He got hurt again. And there's a lot of similarities when I see all three of you guys. I'm like, there's issues that you've all had to deal with. Some of it has been very loud and very negative, but for some reason, Phil and Eli have been able to fight through that. So you have two examples of two great quarterbacks in this organization that have gone through a lot of what you have gone through in your young career. So there is an opportunity for you to do exactly what they've done.
Yeah,
have you ever thought about that?
Yeah, I think that, like we talked about, playing in New York is different, and there's there's more media scrutiny. The fans have a high level of expectation for what this team is, what this organization has done, because of the tradition of winning around here. So, I understand that. And, I'm excited about it.
Yeah, it's interesting because you do such a great job in not creating headlines or anything with these press conferences. For example, we were at Jets camp, and I told Rob Saleh he's got to stop talking sometimes because he talks himself into these headlines. So you've never done that. But then also,
I don't think you've said enough to the point. Like, I don't even think I know who you are. You know what I'm saying? Because you've been so reserved, and like your personality doesn't come out. And it's a fine line to walk when you're a quarterback in New York, because you don't want to be the guy that says something that creates a headline, but you also don't want to be the guy that people are like, well, I don't even know who Daniel Jones is. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
because I feel like every year, well, it's like, you know, to say,
listen,
you know,
listen, when he hangs out with Eli Manning in West Hampton, we know who he is.
But the fans don't see that, and we don't see that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, sure.
And like, I think that there's a little bit of that could, the fans want to see some more of that, but not so much where you get in trouble.
Yeah, well, I appreciate the advice, Gio. Maybe I'll think about that and think about how I present myself.
Well, but, it's just, I feel like I want to know more about you.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know, I think there's a balance to it, and always trying to think through that, what the best way to handle that, and appreciate your advice. I don't know if I'll
let's get lunch today. What do you think? Well, me and you'll get some lunch.
Here it is, Daniel. You know, it's all right to throw your helmet. Let's put it that way, on the sideline. If coach gets in your face, it's okay for you to get into his face. That's the only thing I can tell you. It's your team.
You get in the coach's face.
That's right. Hey, it's your team, man. It's your team. It's your reputation. That's what it's all about. At the end of the day, you're the unquestioned leader. You do have the respect of your players. I think you do handle yourself professionally. You've been amazing in that regard. It's just that, you know, unfortunately, injury gets in the way, and that creates the inconsistency, I think.
Yeah.
Well, so, just throw the helmet once or twice, and everybody will love you.
Maybe I'll throw my helmet. And I'll think about Gio's advice.
I'm telling you, man, I think there are a lot of Giant fans that really, really like you, and I think it's because they see the talent, and they see, you know, that game in Minnesota. You watch that game back. I actually was watching some of the highlights of that the other day. I mean, it's like if you woke up out of a coma and watched Daniel play in that game, like, that's the best quarterback in the NFL. Like, that's how well you played in that game. So that's why I think the potential of you staying healthy the entire year and doing it again, that's why a lot of Giant fans are excited about this offense this year. And a lot of touchdowns, some Malik Nabers, and a lot of fun. We're looking forward to it.
Yes. Listen, Daniel, great to see you. Thanks for coming on with us. I know that there's a lot of expectations and a lot of heavy, responsibility on your shoulders, but I think you can handle it.
I can.
Go out there and have a hell of a season, man.
Good. We're excited.
I hope so.
And looking forward to getting out there.
All right, Daniel. Thanks. Good luck, man. All the best. Yeah. Daniel Jones, Giants starting quarterback, of course, on The Fan and CBS Sports Network.
It's the morning show with Boomer and Gio.
On The Fan and CBS Sports Network, live from Giants camp. We got Joe Shane, general manager, joining us at 9 a.m.
All right, so what'd you think about Daniel Jones this morning?
I mean, it very similar to the other interviews that we've had with him the last 4 years. Maybe a little bit more personality after I talked about that. But it just hit me in the middle of the interview. I'm looking at him like, I don't even know who this guy is. Like, he's been here, like, of all the athletes that we have talked about, I think I know the least about him.
But you may have talked the most about him.
Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know what makes this guy tick. I don't know what he likes. I don't know what makes him angry. I don't know what makes him happy. Like, I know nothing about him.
Well, Eli was the same way.
Yeah, but he was a Manning. He did the commercials with Peyton. Like, you knew he was just sort of like, I'm Eli Manning.
Yeah.
You know, and like, he won. He's different. Like, can you, like, is there, like, I know more about, Aaron Rodgers has been here for a year and a half. I know everything. I know his blood type.
I mean, yeah. Yeah, but he's been around, you know, he's 40 years old. I mean,
but you know what I mean?
He's had so much success as a player, as an MVP, as a Super Bowl winner, the all pros, all the commercials, doing Jeopardy. I mean, he's done so much more than Daniel Jones. And Daniel, you know, when I was trying to explain to him was that Eli got off to a really slow start. Phil got off to a slow start. Injuries, getting, you know, screamed at by Parcells and everything else going on around him when he was first starting out as a Giant quarterback. I was trying to say, look, man, you know, those guys had to deal with all the stuff you're dealing with. You're not the only one. You know what I mean? Like, and you got to fight through this, and I think he will. And if I had to bet, I'm thinking that Brian Daboll is going to go out there and be aggressive calling plays.
Yeah, that's what it seems like, and that's great, and that'll be fun to watch. But, like, for example, like Kirk Cousins, he was one of those guys that said all the right things for the most part, never really made any waves. But even him, he had moments. you like that. He had that moment. The chains with the wide receivers on the plane. Then they do the quarterback thing, and you see him with his family, and the like. Even you found personality in his boring ass life. But with Daniel, you can't. You're chipping away, trying to find something in
there.
He's
very careful. I'm sure his family and his friends see a completely different side.
Don't you think it'd be good for his brand, though, if we saw a little bit of it?
So I told him it's okay to throw your helmet. It's okay to be pissed off on the sideline. You remember the greatest quarterback of all time did that many times, Tom Brady.
Mm, yeah.
And you saw the fire in his eyes. That's what we want to see from our quarterbacks is we want to see a fire in their eyes, an emotion on the sideline. But it's got to be a controlled emotion, a controlled aggression, because you don't want to get yourself, outside of who you really are as a person and a player, but you do want to show emotion.
Yeah.
We have not seen a lot of that.
Yeah, I would love to, because Joe Shane had these conversations, and he said he had these conversations with Daniel around the draft of listen, we're going after guys, we're looking at quarterbacks, it's because you've been hurt. Is Daniel in those meetings, closed door with Joe Shane, no cameras, is that the Daniel that Joe Shane gets, the one that just sat next to us, I understand, and
gonna... he may. I mean, Daniel,
or is he
maybe...
like this sucks, Joe?
Well, that's why I was. That's why.
What does he do? I want to know.
That's why I was asking him as to whether or not how he felt watching that, and he said he did watch it, and he wasn't happy about it, and I was glad to hear that.
Yeah, but it's like him not being happy, just like staring off into the distance and then walking away.
No.
Or is it him actually being like, man?
You're not going to see that.
Son of a bitch.
You're not going to see that here. He's too professional. He's too buttoned up of a guy. He's too smart of a guy.
No, I'm talking about behind the scenes.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Behind the scenes is completely different.
But is it? See, my question is it? Because I don't know. I don't know if he's throwing stuff down on the ground.
They know they openly know that they or he openly knows or he knows that they openly are trying to get rid of him or to get somebody else in here. He knows that.
No, I know.
And listen, I wouldn't trust anybody around here if I were him. And I would want to go out and prove that I belong in this league somewhere.
Yeah.
I want to be here. I want to play here. And I want to lead the team to the playoffs. I want to take the team to the Super Bowl. But I'm telling you, Al, do you remember in 2007 when we first started, the amount of people that were calling in that were done with Eli Manning?
Yeah, I feel like we had that often with Eli Manning.
No, I'm talking about when we first
started. Eli sucks. Eli sucks.
Exactly. I remember dealing with, Craig being Craig and just basically calling out what he was seeing. And I'm trying to explain to him that, this is what's going on. And nobody wanted to hear it. And then, of course, they went on that just a remarkable run, which basically solidified Eli staying here for his entire career. That's all it takes.
That was the year with the San Francisco game, right?
That was the 07. That was the year that Craig had had to walk across the bridge. The
11 was San Francisco.
They beat the Bucks. The Bucks, the Cowboys.
The Packers.
And the Packers. Mm-hmm. And that was a Tom Coughlin frozen red face.
Oh, the frozen nose, yeah.
Corey Webster interception.
Yes.
In overtime that year. You remember.
They kind of run together.
Yeah. Eddie, do you have the Jerry Recco beating of the dead Eli horse? I'd like to hear that now, if you do, somewhere. Because that, to me, was... I love that. You had it. I forget what... I mean,
Yeah, this was like Juan Soto, in a way.
Yeah. You just had enough of Boomer just...
Eli sucks. Eli sucks.
He's still breathing.
Still sucks.
that was directed to Boomer. It was not directed to Eli. It was Jerry saying that Boomer was beating the dead horse with Eli. That was one hell of a time.
That's what I mean. Even in that first year, then, even in his Super Bowl MVP year, we were still complaining about him during the season.
Well, it was the offensive line too.
Oh, right, the offensive line's fault.
Stop it with the offensive line.
We've been through a lot with the Giants, man. Even in my time on this show, we've been through a lot with the Giants.
It's been crazy.
You guys got two Super
Bowl
championships.
Just amazing.
I didn't get any of that.
You those get 40-0 on opening night.
And then beating it, and then Daniel Jones being all world against my favorite football team.
That's true. God. That is true.
You know, I was the in-studio producer of the Giants on WFAN in 2007.
Mm.
So I was there watching every one of those games, doing the radio broadcast during that run. I'll never forget that. That was the greatest postseason run in NFL history.
Yes, without question. All on the road. And, you know, what was interesting about that was that Buffalo game where Ahmad Bradshaw and Antonio Pierce showed up and made two huge plays, if I remember correctly. And I remember Eli's stat line for that game was not great because it was a very blustery, windy, cold, wet day. And it was all about running and defense. And that's exactly what the Giants turned out to be.
You know what we always talk about, you know, you pay a lot to go to a game and you hope the experience is worth the money. So that Cowboy-Giant game, I flew to Houston that Sunday morning, rented a car, drove to Dallas, got there at 2 o'clock for a 3 o'clock game, watched that, then had to drive to Austin to fly home the next morning to be on the air at 4 o'clock with Mike and Chris.
Oh!
Yeah.
Jeez.
That was a rough 24 hours.
Wow.
I thought for sure the Cowboys were going to the NFC Championship game, and that was going to be awesome.
I think they were 13-3 in the one seed, aren't they?
Yeah, that was Wade Phillips' first year after Parcells left.
Man, oh man.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. It's a lot of travel for that loss.
All right, 9 a.m., Joe Shane will join us, the newly branded superstar, TV star, Joe Shane. Right now, Jerry Recco with his update. What's happening?
Brought to you by Town Fair Tire. Brought to you by Town Fair Tire. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire, nobody. And, of course, the Farmer's Dog, fresh human-grade dog food delivered right to your door. We haven't done much on the Mets because it's been a football day, but getting back to them, very exciting win last night at Citi Field.
3-0. One on hit deep to left center. This might do it. Back near the wall. It is gone. Put it in the box. Francisco Alvarez with a towering game winning home run.
Oh my God.
That's right. That was Howie Rose on WCBS 880. Mets win, beat the Orioles 4-3. Alvarez, the game winner, came in the ninth inning, a couple of innings after the Mets had blown the lead, the home run that was given up by David Peterson. Here was Brandon Nimmo talking about Alvarez coming through in a big spot in a big game.
It was a roller coaster of a game, but, you know, Alvy, he lives for those moments, and he's a really special kind of player. And I know things haven't been going as well as he would love, but that doesn't mean anything to him in those situations. You know, he just needs that one time, and he always looks for it.
And in terms of Nimmo and the injury, all is good. Here was Nimmo again.
Best case scenario, dodged a bullet there, and, really excited about this being a short-term thing. So day-to-day right now, good day-to-day, and we'll see how I'm doing tomorrow, and we'll make the right call for tomorrow on my availability.
We shall see. So day-to-day with the injury, David Peterson, here he was sounding like Boomer the way Mike put this down. One pitch, one inning, one game at a time for me and us.
I don't think we're really focused on that. You know, I think we're focused on the game today, and tomorrow we'll be focused on beating the Orioles and taking it one day at a time, one pitch at a time, and controlling what we control, and focus on what's in front of us today, and let the cards settle how they do.
Smart man.
Let the cards settle how they do. It's age-old wisdom there.
Edwin Diaz through the ninth. He got the win. Mets now a game and a half behind Atlanta for the third wild card. Braves take on the Phillies tonight. Austin Riley, a broken hand, done for the rest of the regular season for Atlanta. We'll have the Yankees and Guardians on the Fan tonight. That's a 6:25 pregame on the Fan. Luis Gil makes the start. The Yankees with a half-game lead on Baltimore atop the AL East. All right, some football as we have gone through the morning. Here is Javon Kinlaw of the Jets. Very, very excited for the season to come, specifically for himself.
The work ethic has always been crazy. The health finally caught up, man. And I've been able to do some crazy things out there. Just going back and watching some of the film that I'm putting down right now. And that's like, damn, like, you know, like, I can really do this thing.
Oh, man. Hey, we get the next Aaron Donald.
That's great. Watching me on tape, man.
Man, damn, I am good. It's not like watching us on tape. Damn, we good, man.
Damn, this is pretty damn good.
That's a very good clip. Here is Mike Williams. We know about his injury history. He's here with the Jets year one, and all's well right now.
I'm good. Now it's just getting the repetition, getting the reps in, running a lot of routes, just seeing how everything responds, and just keep doing that.
And keep doing that. Now, still no Hassan Reddick, we know that. Matthew Judon is with Atlanta. He is going to play while I guess they try and work something out, although that might not happen until after the year. We'll see. And here he is talking about not exactly doing the same thing that Reddick's doing.
The Atlanta Falcons know nothing about me as a football player and as about me as a man or, you know, that stuff. They really know my previous resume. And so I can't really demand or ask for anything that I haven't worked for.
How about that?
I like that. I like that attitude, getting some place new.
Yes.
He's got a resume. He's got obviously a lot of success on there, but he's saying screw it. Fresh start.
Never did it for the Falcons.
Got to prove myself here.
That's the same thing with Reddick. He hasn't done anything for the Jets just yet. Mm. So we shall see. Eddie, skip the next two. Not interested in these two. Give me this next Tom Brady. I don't know what he's doing. I guess he's just like bashing the league and the way the game is being played now, which is interesting, I guess. This is another one from the Stephen A. Smith podcast show, whatever it was, talking about how the game is evolving.
It used to be thought of at a higher level. We used to spend hours and hours in the offseason in training camp trying to
be
a little bit better than next year. But I think what happens is it discourages the coaches from going to deep levels because they realize the players don't have the opportunity to go to a deep level, so they're just going to teach them where they're at.
And the Lord said that we will practice two times a day.
That's just weird.
I think he's talking about is also the limited amount of time the coaches have access to the players because of the CBA.
Yeah.
It has changed since he started back in 2000. But
he didn't say this stuff when he was still playing, though.
Well, he's supposed to be he's a media type now. So now we have to be a little bit more controversial.
Did you like all the video of him in the booth the other night? And Brady's so excited. He's going to do games.
That'd be interesting. Yes. It's going to be really interesting. I mean, you know, it was funny. I was talking to a friend of mine, and I guess Tom Brady, I think, did call Chris Collinsworth just to talk to him about some of the situation because he's, you know, Chris has covered him a million times. And Chris said, "You sure you want to do this?" I'm like, you know, for $375 million, I'll do it.
Yeah, exactly. Here's Jim Harbaugh out in L.A. with the Chargers. Justin Herbert back on the practice field. What's that like for him? The team
felt like the music should be playing. I thought I heard music. Voices of angels, maybe. It felt great.
This guy.
You're going to have a lot of cuts from him this year.
Oh, man. He says he was asked about the players, though. How about their reaction?
I was excited. I think they would be excited, too. I don't know if they heard the angels sing like I did, but they might have.
This guy.
Is he being serious?
I think he is.
He's heard angels singing?
I mean, I think he's being facetious there, but no. This is him, though. I mean, he's out there, as we know. Commanders named rookie quarterback Jaden Daniels their starter. I don't think that's a surprise by any. And then let me give you this one. This whole Tyreek Hill, Noah Lyles thing, I guess, has continued now because now Lyles has spoken. Remember when I played those Tyreek Hill clips last week? He was talking about how he would go out and beat him in a race. Lyles, well, says bring it on, but that ain't happening.
Tyreek is just chasing cloud. If he really wanted to race people, he would have showed up like DK Metcalf. The man dodges smoke. I don't got time for that.
So we'll see if this takes another step forward or if this is it and the end of it.
Yeah.
See, it's silly.
Yeah, I mean, it's
very silly.
It is, but maybe they're working together on some sort of Netflix special or something.
That could be. Very possible.
Yeah. I was laughing. I saw the Jake Paul, Mike Tyson, New York City press conference. And Jake Paul had a line where he said, he was in New York City and they were booing him. And they said, "Oh, yeah, all right, New York City. I mean, you're just like Mike Tyson. You were great 20 years ago." Thought it was a good line.
That's not a bad line.
Oh, good line.
That's pretty
Paul.
Good.
That's when does that happen?
November, right? Is it November or October?
November?
I think so, yeah, at AT&T Stadium in Dallas, yeah.
And they're promoting it now in August?
I mean, well, it was a big letdown when it got canceled.
But it's a part of Fanatics Fest, so they...
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah, so they put a part of it, made it a part of it, and I just hope Mike Tyson punches him right in the face.
That's the goal. All right, Boomer and Geo coming to you live from the Traveling Built Ford Toughest Studio.
It's the Morning Show with Boomer and Geo.
Boomer and Geo live from Giants camp on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. Joe Shane joins us in just over 10 minutes from now, 9 a.m., the Giants general manager with us. So I was watching a couple guys, CBS Sports Network guys. They open up the box of Dunkin' over there with the donuts in there.
Yeah.
I was watching to see which one they were going to grab.
Right.
I was just interested because it was an untouched box, right?
Oh.
So it was like, this is the first overall pick in the draft.
So you got a variety of donuts.
They were all variety, and yes, you will not guess what went first overall. So now, I mean,
the French crawler.
Yes!
Everybody loves a French crawler.
It was the crawler!
Yes!
See, in my circle, the crawler is the last pick.
Usually in my circle, it's the Boston cream.
Is the last pick?
No, it's the first pick.
Exactly! So Boston Cream is the number one overall pick in the circle that I run, the donut circle.
Either that or the Bavarian.
Yeah.
Without the chocolate. It has the cream in it, but it just doesn't have the chocolate icing on it.
And the most underrated is the chocolate glazed. I love a chocolate glazed. So the cruller's usually the one that you open up the box and there's one left and it's that.
Nope.
I can't believe you guys.
You know why I say the French crawler? Because I feel like we have people that work for this show that are refined.
Sure.
That's what it is. They're a bunch of refined folks.
Refined palates. Yeah, yeah. The French crawler.
When I think of like a refined person, I think of Stephen Waldron.
Waldron's just too afraid to grab a donut. He'll just bounce around it and cough on them and then leave. You know?
Who's that young man with the hat over there, the hood up and everything? He looks like he's freezing.
He is freezing, just like all of us. It's not gotten any warmer out here.
It's like, great.
It's great.
This is absolutely great. You know what? I'll tell you, if I came out here and we're going to have a football practice in this weather today, I'd feel like this would be awesome. I'd have so much energy.
Hey, Sean, give me the box of donuts, see if there's any left in there. And I'm curious.
We'll see what's left.
I want to see what's left last. Yeah, if there's anything left.
We think an original donut's left last, or do we think a glazed donut is left last?
I'm gonna say that the old fashioned is in there.
The old fashioned.
I'm gonna say the old fashioned's in. It is. The old fashioned is in there. The jelly is still there.
Well, the Bavarian is still there too.
Wow.
Al, you want a donut?
I just was eating some things, so I'm sorry.
Have a donut, Al.
All right, so if I were to grab one of these, I'm a jelly donut guy. I do like a jelly donut, so I would grab the jelly donut.
Okay.
And then I'd probably just go with the regular glazed here, would be 1-2 for me.
I'm the Bavarian.
You'd take the Bavarian?
Yes, and then
which is just sugar. This is just sugar donut, right?
Well,
this
one. But I would take the Bavarian, and then I would go to the old-fashioned.
Wow.
How about you, Al?
I'd go old-fashioned first out of these.
Of course you would.
Then I'd probably go jelly second.
Yeah, love the jelly. You know who loves a jelly donut? Eddie Scazzeri. Me and Eddie, if Stanley shows up with jelly donuts, yes, I'm always, you know, I grab one and I give one to Eddie right away, you know?
You should grab that jelly donut and jam it down Al's throat.
I'm not doing that. Oh, Steven, what'd you take? You took the glazed, the regular glazed. See, we can't, like stuffing a donut down Al's throat is like force-feeding Spike Eskin a filet mignon.
Yes, I know.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, like, it's just not the thing to do.
That's why you do it. That's why we should do it.
No. I feel bad. I'm like, he doesn't want to eat that way. He doesn't want to have
it. Remember the time that we had Chernoff in studio and we wrapped him up in tinfoil?
He enjoyed that way too much.
I think he really liked
it. That was supposed to be a punishment for him, and the whole time he was like, oh, man, tickles. He really enjoyed that whole thing.
But you do things like that because you're not supposed to do things like that.
Yeah,
that's why.
Yeah, of course, I get it, but I also, I would feel like, I don't know, like Al's body is conditioned to only have certain things inside of it.
You think he'd have an adverse reaction?
I do. His blood sugar might go up or something. I mean, he's frail with this osteoporosis these days.
It'd be like someone with a peanut allergy getting peanuts.
Right. But the way that he eats now, he can't. And by the way, that peanut allergy thing, what you guys were talking about in the warm-up show, what was that story again?
It was some dude on the Cowboys, a defensive lineman, I think it was. He had some sort of milk that must have had peanuts in it, or some sort of nut in it.
Like an oat milk or something? Nut milk?
They said it was milk, but then they said it was peanut allergy related. He had to go to the emergency room.
So he had nut milk.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
Kind of nut milk? Like almond milk, maybe? Or
no, it's peanuts. It has to be contained peanuts or made in a peanut factory. Like, or
so, yeah. And so he had an adverse reaction, obviously.
Yeah. That could kill you.
It can. It's a very aggressive situation.
I remember we were on a plane, and in the area that we were on, there was someone with a peanut allergy, and they wouldn't say who it was, because I guess they're supposed to protect the identity of the peanut allergy person, which is strange. I'd just be like, it's me. Don't kill me. I got the peanut allergy. I don't understand why they're doing it.
Yes.
And there was this older woman who couldn't figure it out. You know, and she's like, but I have these nuts here. I would like to eat. They're like, you can't eat them. You might kill the person in the row next to you. It's like a new, like, it's a newer thing.
Well, I mean, I remember when, so it's interesting because my son Gunnar, when he was younger, he would get a lot of his protein and fat from peanut butter.
Okay.
And he loved peanut butter and he loved the Snickers bar. And because you're CF, you don't digest food properly. You need to eat as much as you possibly can, even if it is like just peanut butter or Snicker bars or anything like that.
Yeah.
And there was a kid that came into school who had a peanut allergy.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing. I was just thinking, you know what this broadcast needed? A lawnmower. After 3 hours of...
Now we got a lawnmower behind us. So this kid comes in with a peanut allergy and was like, okay, no more peanuts in the school. And we're like, wait a minute, time out.
Yeah.
We have to be careful about this. He has CF. He needs protein. He needs fat. He needs to get his nourishment. And this is what he likes to eat. He would take a peanut butter and jelly to school every day.
Right.
And it was a little bit of a fight. But we had to be practical about it and keep the kids apart and make sure everybody knew exactly what was going on. So, but I think nowadays it's even more prevalent than it was back in the late 90s.
Yeah. And there was that other story where that guy peed on somebody on a plane, too, when he was sleepwalking.
But he had Ambien. He took Ambien. That's what happened. And by the way, that guy is huge. He's a big man.
Yeah.
So you have a big man walking around on a plane, peeing on somebody. You're turning the plane around and you're landing it.
I'll turn this plane right around.
Get this guy out of here.
Okay. Joe Shane joins us next. Is Boomer
please pee here.
Boomer, would you please take my nuts?
All right. When you get a chance, throw to the Sports Minute, and we'll come back with the Giants general manager. I hope he's listening right now.
I would just think what I just heard Jerry with that drop instead of his shorts yesterday.
I thought they were Joseph's pants that he was wearing.
They're 3 inches lower than his knees.
It's the Morning Show with Boomer and Geo.
We're in Geo live from Giants Camp on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. Joe Shane joins us just over 10 minutes from now, 9 a.m., the Giants general manager with us. So I was watching a couple guys, CBS Sports Network guys. They open up the box of Dunkin' over there with the donuts in there.
Yeah.
I was watching to see which one they were going to grab.
Right.
I was just interested because it was an untouched box, right?
Oh.
So it was like, this is the first overall pick in the draft.
So you got a variety of donuts. Well,
they were all variety. And you will not guess what went first overall. Ooh. So now, I mean,
the French crawler.
Yes.
Everybody loves a French crawler.
It was the crawler.
Yes.
See, in my circle, the crawler is the last pick.
Usually in my circle, it's the Boston cream.
Is the last pick?
No, it's the first pick.
Exactly. So Boston cream is the number one overall pick in the circle that I run, the donuts.
Or either that or the Bavarian.
Yeah.
Without the chocolate. It has the cream in it, but it just doesn't have the chocolate icing on it.
And the most underrated is the chocolate glazed. I love a chocolate glazed. But so the cruller's usually the one that you open up the box and there's one left and it's that.
Nope.
I can't believe you guys.
You know why I say the French cruller? Because I feel like we have people that work for this show that are refined.
Sure. That's what it is.
They're a bunch of refined folks.
Refined palates. Yeah, like, the French girl.
When I think of a refined person, I think of Stephen Waldron.
Waldron's just too afraid to grab a donut. He'll just bounce around it and cough on him and then leave. You know?
Who's that young man with the hat over there, the hood up and everything? He looks like he's freezing.
He is freezing, just like all of us. It's not gotten any warmer out here.
It's great.
It's great.
great. This is absolutely great. You know what? I'll tell you, if I came out here and we're going to have a football practice in this weather today, I'd feel like this would be awesome. I'd have so much energy.
Hey, Sean, give me the box of donuts, see if there's any left in there. And I'm curious.
Oh, we'll see what's left.
I want to see what's left last. Yeah, if there's anything left.
We think an original donut's left last, or do we think a glazed donut is left last?
I'm gonna say that the old fashioned is in there.
The old fashioned.
I'm gonna say the old fashioned's in. It is. The old fashioned is in there. The jelly is still there.
Well, the Bavarian is still there too.
Wow.
Al, you want a donut?
I just was eating some things, so I'm sorry.
Have a donut, Al.
All right, so if I were to grab one of these, I'm a jelly donut guy. I do like a jelly donut, so I would grab the jelly donut.
Okay.
And then I'd probably just go with the regular glazed here, would be 1-2 for me.
The Bavarian?
You'd take the Bavarian?
Yes, and then
which is just sugar. This is just sugar donut, right?
Well, but I would take the Bavarian, and then I would go to the old-fashioned.
Wow.
How about you, Al?
I'd go old-fashioned first out of these.
Of course you would.
Then I'd probably go jelly second.
Yeah, love the jelly. You know who loves a jelly donut? Eddie Scazzeri. Me and Eddie, if Stanley shows up with jelly donuts, I'm always, I grab one and I give one to Eddie right away,
You should grab that jelly donut and jam it down Al's throat.
I'm not doing that. Oh, Steven, what'd you take? You took the glazed, the regular glazed. See, we can't, like stuffing a donut down Al's throat is like force-feeding Spike Eskin a filet mignon.
Yes,
I know. What I'm saying? It's just not the thing to do.
That's why you do it. That's why we should do it.
No. I feel bad. I'm like, he doesn't want to eat that way. He doesn't want to have
it. Remember the time that we had Chernoff in studio and we wrapped him up in tinfoil?
He enjoyed that way too much.
I think he really liked
it. That was supposed to be a punishment for him, and the whole time he was like, oh, man, tickles. He really enjoyed that whole thing.
But you do things like that because you're not supposed to do things like that.
Yeah,
that's why.
Yeah, of course, I get it, but I also, I would feel Al's body is conditioned to only have certain things inside of it.
You think he'd have an adverse reaction?
His blood sugar might go up or something. I mean, he's frail with this osteoporosis. Yeah.
It'd be like someone with a peanut allergy getting peanuts.
Right. With the way that he eats now, he can't. And by the way, that peanut allergy thing, what you guys were talking about in the warm-up show, what was that story again?
It was some dude on the Cowboys, a defensive lineman, I think it was. He had some sort of milk that must have had peanuts in it or some sort of nut in it.
Like an oat milk or something? Nut milk?
They said it was milk, but then they said it was peanut allergy related. He had to go to the emergency room.
So he had nut milk.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
What kind of nut milk? Like almond milk, maybe?
Peanuts. It has to be contained peanuts or made in a peanut factory or something.
And so he had an adverse reaction, obviously.
He did, yeah. That could kill you.
It can. It's a very aggressive situation.
I remember we were on a plane, and in the area that we were on, there was someone with a peanut allergy, and they wouldn't say who it was, because I guess they're supposed to protect the identity of the peanut allergy person, which is strange. I'd just be like, it's me. Don't kill me. I got the peanut allergy. I don't understand why they're doing that.
Yes.
And there was this older woman who couldn't figure it out. And she's like, but I have these nuts here. I would like to eat. They're like, you can't eat them. You might kill the person in the row next to you. It's like a new, it's a newer thing.
Well, I mean, I remember when, so it's interesting because my son Gunnar, when he was younger, he would get a lot of his protein and fat from peanut butter.
Okay.
And he loved peanut butter and he loved the Snickers bar. And because you're CF, you don't digest food properly. You need to eat as much as you possibly can, even if it is like just peanut butter or Snicker bars or anything like that.
Yeah.
And there was a kid that came into school who had a peanut allergy.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing. I was just thinking, you know what this broadcast needed? A lawnmower. After 3 hours of...
Now we got a lawnmower behind us. So this kid comes in with a peanut allergy and it was like, okay, no more peanuts in the school. And we're like, wait a minute, time out.
Yeah.
We have to be careful about this. He has CF. He needs protein. He needs fat. He needs to get his nourishment. And this is what he likes to eat. He would take a peanut butter and jelly to school every day.
Right.
And it was a little bit of a fight. But we had to be practical about it and keep the kids apart and make sure everybody knew exactly what was going on. So so, but I think nowadays it's even more prevalent than it was back in the late 90s.
Yeah. And there was that other story where that guy peed on somebody on a plane, too, when he was sleepwalking.
But he had Ambien. He took Ambien. That's what happened. That's scary. By the way, that guy is huge. He's a big man.
Yeah.
So you have a big man walking around on a plane, peeing on somebody. You're turning the plane around and you're landing it.
I'll turn this plane right around.
Get this guy out of here.
Okay. Joe Shane joins us next.
Boomer, please pee here.
Boomer, would you please take my nuts?
All right. When you get a chance, throw to the Sports Minute, and we'll come back with the Giants general manager. I hope he's listening right now.
I would just think what I just heard Jerry with that drop. I was thinking of his shorts yesterday.
I thought they were Joseph's pants that he was wearing.
They're 3 inches lower than his knees.